from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 26th day of November 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll hear from Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist, about the corn export market and whether it's keeping pace with what USDA expects for the year. We'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons, and we'll close out our time by taking up the weather forecast with the guys up at Wrist Pulse. Oh, and along the way, I'll tell you about my ventures for this week. I'll be headed back to Kansas City for the Van Trump Conference. It's VTC18. I'm looking forward to being there along with a couple of our regular analysts on air, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds and Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Marketing. And it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the futures trade in Chicago, where, Kurt, wheat futures were higher, but soybeans were sharply lower, down some 18 cents on the day. I take it that's in part because traders are fearful that President Xi and President Trump may not come to any, well, conclusions that they'll like this week at the G20 in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
That kind of put doubts in the marketplace, and so we saw some selling pressure enough to move below some previous low, which generated some sell programs to kick in. But also what fueled the selling was favorable South American weather. You know, there's ideas beans are going to be ready to go here, and the conditions are fairly good in the southern hemisphere, so that kind of limited the buying interest and fueled the selling. The fund sold about 7,500 contracts of beans going into midday. But on the flip side of it, the southern hemisphere also saw producers selling on fears that there could be a deal in the workings and they would lose what little premium they have left. So I hope the South American guys are right, but we'll see how that unfolds. The disappointing thing was Goldman Sachs put out a bullish commodity forecast this morning, and they were looking for commodities in general to show a 19% return as we move forward here in the future. And they were looking at U.S.-China agreement taking place, and OPEC cutting crude production, for say. So I'm kind of cheering for Goldman here to be right and see some recovery on the upside here. Bean-wise, today's lows, 62% retracement area, and we're carving out a 10-week low. So we're in an area here, hopefully, we've got the selling or the bearish news built in.
Man, it could be laying the foundation to put something in place. We have an awful lot happening this week. I think the OPEC meeting might be happening, too, but it's certainly the G20 meeting is happening, and President Xi, President Trump will be working towards a trade deal. We'll probably hear positive news out of that one way or the other. I do have a question for you related to this. So depending on what the positive news we hear might be, how much of a dampening will there be just from the sheer size of the carryout of the soybeans in the United States and a good crop that appears to be coming on in South America?
Well, that's the concern as we move forward here. If they are able to find common ground, it's going to be awful hard for the beans to move sharply higher from the standpoint that time-wise, we're just running out of time for them to buy and get those beans in a deliverable position to be shipped. Virtually starting to be kind of low percentage chance as each day goes by, because those ships are going to be heading toward the southern hemisphere. What we can do, though, is pick up additional world demand from non-traditional buyers to get us through. So if they are able to see some common ground, I think it'd be probably more optimistic, the 2019 production versus the 18 production.
And was it the conflict in the Black Sea and the Kerch Strait that pushed wheat futures higher on the idea that some of those ports might not be available to ship wheat? I don't know whether that's the case. I'm making an educated guess on it.
Yeah, that's a concern whenever you have two different countries going at it and military action, kind of taking place, seizure ships and stuff, the uncertainty there. puts a little premium in the U.S. market. We did see some U.S. Sales and some world demand pick up, but two, the Ukrainians pretty well backed off on all offers on wheat, so that also helped the wheat market. A lot of spread activity, buying wheat, selling corn, buying wheat, selling beans. If wheat can lead, I hope the bean and corn market takes note here.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Inspections were fairly good this morning. Corn and beans both were at the upper end of expectation. Wheat was disappointing. Harvest progress, looking for corn harvest 95% complete, bean harvest 96% complete as a nation. Boy, that last couple of percent, they're going to have an awful tough go here with the weather we've been seeing. Corn chart support here is at 68.5, 368. That's 62% back down to the low at 54.75. And just like the beans, we're due for a 10-week cycle low here any day.
Thanks so much, Kurt.
Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, let's start with the climate change report released by the Trump administration Friday. The report, released the day after Thanksgiving, is the fourth annual climate risk assessment from the United States Global Change Research Program, or USGCRP. The report was written with the help of 13 government agencies and some 300 experts, including scientists at USDA. Here's a rundown of the key food ag findings in the 1,600-page report. First, crop declines will come over a long term. The report notes that the agriculture sector is good at adapting to changing conditions, but yields of major crops as well as farm profits are expected to decline by the middle of the century. Yield changes are expected to vary. Warm temps will impact crops in different ways. The assessment highlights modeling that shows how various crop yields are expected to change through the year 2100. In California's Central Valley, alfalfa and safflower yields look relatively stable, for example, but wheat, cotton, and sunflower are projected to see substantially lower yields. Soybeans have a good chance of seeing increased yields early this century thanks to increasing carbon dioxide, but the assessment says the yield boost is projected to be offset later in the century by stress from higher temperatures, and scientists project that some regions, particularly the West and the South, will see more consecutive dry days, while much of the country will see more hot nights, changes that will likely contribute to lower grain yields and more stress on meat, milk, and egg production. As the concentration, by the way, of carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere, there will continue to be a disproportionately positive impact on weeds. This effect will contribute to the increased risk of crop loss due to weed pressure. And finally, while rising CO2 can increase plant growth and is generally beneficial for weeds, it also can fuel a reduction in the nutritional quality of a variety of crops. Well, from last week's climate change news, let's go to this week's trade change news. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping are set to meet this week on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Buenos Aires after months of trade tensions that have shown no signs of easing. Beyond the trade standoff, the meeting could begin to shape how the two economic superpowers will share the world stage for years to come. The long-term interests of both nations are at stake, so a breakthrough on trade will be difficult to achieve. High-level U.S. and Chinese officials have met at least four times this year but failed to broker a solution to the dispute. That means there's a whole lot riding on Mr. Trump and Mr. Xi's outsized personas when they meet. U.S. officials and trade experts see both leaders as wild cards. And finally, this note, where in the upper Midwest, farm bankruptcies are on the rise. The number of farm bankruptcies in Minnesota has doubled over the last 4 years, with commodity prices down and more farmers falling behind on low payments. That according to the Star Tribune. In Minnesota, Montana, Wisconsin, and the Dakotas, 84 farms filed for bankruptcy over a one-year period ending in June, according to the analysis from the Minneapolis Fed, more than double the number from the same period in 2013 and 2014. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, now joined by Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. This week in the weekly outlook that you can find on the Farm Doc Daily website, it's there right now, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. He takes up corn consumption. Are we on pace as to what we're looking forward to for the year as it's related to the WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate reports from the USDA?
Yeah, so far this year we are on pace. I mean, they've got exports at about 2.45 billion bushels. We've seen strong exports early in the marketing year. We're definitely on pace, well above last year's pace, but everybody needs to remember we got off to sort of a sluggish start last year and really picked up in the second half of the marketing year. That sort of carried into this marketing year. We've seen a little bit of weakness recently, but we're still well within the range of 2.45 billion bushels, in my opinion. We're on pace for ethanol use of corn, but there's a lot of uncertainty there. You know, we've seen tighter and tighter ethanol plant margins, and it's really, I think, going to come down to exports this year. We need to do a similar or more of the 1.63 billion gallons we exported last year, I think, to see some significant growth in corn use for ethanol. But right now, we're looking like we're on pace. Feed and residual is always an uncertainty after the disappointing number we saw last year. You know, we'll know December 1st stocks reports come out January 11th, but when you consider the size of the herd, you would expect more feed use, slightly higher feed use. I'm not sure that 5.5 billion bushels is exactly correct, but, you know, the residual's tough to call. So we'll see in January what the December 1st stocks are. You know, when we think about the other industrial uses, there's still strength there. So right now, from the November projections, we are on track. Now, there's a lot of uncertainty left in that. But when we look at the weakness we've seen in corn prices over the last few weeks, it's definitely related to soybean prices and the bearishness in the oil market. And I think both of those things are sort of holding down corn prices.
So pressure coming from there, from the price of oil, which has fallen dramatically from 85 to 55 or something along those lines a barrel. When you look forward, and about the time that many of the analysts get the idea that, well, exports are moving, especially for corn, along at a pretty quick pace, they start to wonder whether it's just front-loaded for some reason and that it's likely to fall off in the back end. What do you think?
I think there's the potential for that to happen. Some of our major export destinations thus far in the marketing year, places like Japan, Taiwan, they tend to import similar amounts year over year. Now, I will say it, we have plentiful supplies of corn, and at these prices, I think there should be strength in exports through the marketing year. I think that 2.45 billion bushels might be near the high end of what we could possibly attain, but right now we are on track to hit that. I don't think we're going to see a second half of the marketing year like we saw last year, where almost for the last 6 months, we did about average 54 million bushels of weekly export inspections. That's not probably going to happen this year. So there is a danger in that sort of fading as we move through the marketing year. But I think with the current prices we're seeing, we should see strength through the whole marketing year in exports.
Given you said that the price of crude oil and the overburdensome supply of soybeans along with trade woes the United States has been suffering through with China, I suppose the OPEC meeting and the meeting at the end of this week between Presidents Xi and Trump will be important to watch.
The G20 meeting is going to be the headliner. The OPEC meeting is important. It's sort of getting blended in with this G20 meeting in Argentina. And any kind of positive news coming out of that may be very supportive for ag commodities. I would seriously think if we get a rally out of that to think about pricing some stuff. Just because there's positive news coming out of it, it feels like to me China and U.S. are very far apart on the kind of agreement. So when we get this kind of noise of some kind of positive development, it may be an opportunity to price corn and soybeans.
Old and new crop.
I would think hard about it, because if we come into January and on January 1st we end up raising the tariffs 25%, I think we might be in for the long haul on this. So it's something to consider. And It really does depend on how much risk you want to take on and what you think is going to happen with this trade agreement. We've really, in the ag space, moved into more of a political world than I think I would like to be in normally when we're thinking about the fundamentals of corn and soybean prices.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
That is Todd Hubbs. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, tell me a little bit about this band of weather that dropped all kinds of snow from Kansas through Chicago. How widespread was that and how much did we get?
Yeah, well, in general, we saw much of the northern portion of Kansas, as well as in the far southern Nebraska, northern Missouri, southern Iowa, here in the northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, picking up anywhere from generally 3 to as much as 10 to 12 inches. The area that picked up around a foot of snow is a pretty small scale area, or small swath, I should say, that extended from right at the Nebraska-Kansas border, northeastward through the Missouri-Iowa border here into portions of northern Illinois. And so quite a strong system, but very small scale in nature, and hence the small area of a very heavy snowfall. But outside of that, probably the biggest story were the winds, and that was true from the plains all the way here into the Midwest, where we saw many gusts above 50, even a few areas above 60 miles per hour, and then combined with those areas that got snow, quite a winter storm.
Do we change things up very much as we go through the week?
Well, the snow is going to stick around here for a few days because of the cold temperatures that are moving in behind the storm system. In fact, the next several days are going to be colder than normal. However, temperatures then will be warming up over the upcoming weekend. There's going to be another storm system, but it's going to be taking a more of a slower track and further to the north. And that's going to allow actually warmer than normal temperatures to return to the Midwest and help to melt the snow. Now, that's also going to be accompanied by some rain activity, including some heavy rain activity. So there's going to be a risk of flooding here coming up later on this week. But overall, it's still in a generally stormy pattern as we go from now into the early part of December.
Any concerns for South America and the crops that are coming on there?
Yeah, Todd, the outlook for South America continues to look really good, and that's true in Brazil, that's true in Argentina, as well as Uruguay and Paraguay. As we've gone through the past couple of weeks, we've seen dryness be reduced in what was just very, isolated dry pockets, and overall soil moisture is currently adequate to abundant, and more rain is on the way, and an overall lack of heat coming up over the next several weeks, and that will keep South America in good shape from a planting season standpoint.
And finally, I think I saw that parts of Europe remain very dry. Not generally a big deal at this time of year, but they've been dry since last May and could really have an impact on the winter wheat crops there.
Yeah, a lot of the dryness has been concentrated in areas of northern Europe, especially Germany, and then portions of France up into the Scandinavian country and the Baltics. That will be improving to some extent over the next couple of weeks as the pattern across Europe, as well as the Black Sea region, very stormy. And for one of the driest areas, namely Germany, they have a really good opportunity for at least 1 inch of rainfall, and primarily rain, not even snow. And that will help improve soil moisture conditions for winter wheat there.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.